you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to The Fandom Files, a new podcast at Sci-Fi Wire. I'm Jordan Zacharin, the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I'm joined by my good pal and co-host, Emily Gaudette. The next voice you'll hear will be hers.
Hi, everybody. I'm Emily Gaudette. I'm a culture reporter at Newsweek, specializing in movies and TV. I would say I'm a bigger geek and fan than Jordan, but...
Trying to one-up me on this
show. One-upping you. It's good that we're embarking on this together.
Yeah, I agree. We've been good friends for probably not as long as it feels, but either way, we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
This is our very first episode, so we should probably give you, the listener, a rundown of what the show is all about. Well, I guess it's pretty much in the title. On The Fandom Files, we'll be exploring the world of geek fandom with a guest or guests from a different fandom in each episode. We're not technically keeping files because we're not narcs, but I just really like alliteration in names.
Well, I mean, they are audio files, right? Like, we're keeping recordings of people. That's
yeah, but we're still not narcs. We're definitely not narcs.
Oh, yeah. No. Definitely not narcs. Definitely not arguing narcs. That. Yeah.
Okay. Not narcs.
We're not going to report anyone.
Anyways, now that we had that very straight... Emily and I have both covered, and to some degree or another, been super fans in our own right. Emily's already bragged about being more of a geek than me. Although if you count the Mets, I'm ashamed to say that, but I'm a pretty big fan there.
Nobody counts
and Godzilla.
Mets.
Godzilla. Anyways, Emily, you were a big Lord of the Rings fan in your
Yeah, that's like my main fandom. There are a couple years in my life where I think that I just thought about Lord of the Rings all day, like Middle Earth, from age 12 to 15, maybe.
Even when it was from breakfast time or...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I, like, made t-shirts for myself that I thought was going to get me, like, friends.
Did they?
Obsessed.
Yeah, I mean, you have a big Lord of the Rings contingent fan friends still.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Well, then that's what sort of we're talking about here. Like, you know, as much as we cover the big geek properties now, we're even more interested in the devoted mega fans, the cosplayers, fan fiction writers, collectors, the people in the communities... you know, and we've written in our time as journalists plenty of stories about them, and now we're talking to them on this podcast, hence this thing that we are doing, our first episode of, going really well so far.
So tonight we have a really fun pair of people from the Empire Saber Guild. You guys can introduce yourselves and tell us what the Empire Saber Guild does, because it's really badass.
It definitely is badass, and I'm Ruben Polizzi, the local director of Empire Saber Guild, and this is...
Amy Krasnowski, I'm the local PR director of Empire Saber Guild.
And together we help put on lightsaber shows for children's hospitals and community events, as well as train individuals on how to properly use a lightsaber and put on and stage choreography.
So my first question is, first of all, that's awesome. That is like really, like I said, badass, both because you use lightsabers and also because you're using them for good.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Definitely the good side of the force working here. What is the proper way to use a lightsaber, and how do you learn that? Because, you know, That's a mystery to me.
Well, I would guess the first way to properly use a lightsaber is to hold it the right way and not really hit anybody to hurt them. That's the number one thing, is you don't want anybody to get injured. But when you come to an Empire Saber Guild class, we definitely teach you the proper techniques of stage combat to make sure that when you go out there on stage, you are performing proper, safe lightsaber techniques.
Is it different than like sword fighting you would learn at like a Renaissance fair? Like, what is the lightsaber part of it? What does that entail?
The stuff that you would learn with us is basically stage combat, which is the same as you would see at a Renaissance fair. It's all choreographed moves based upon the same system of stage choreography. And with us, the only difference is a lightsaber is a blade with a 360-degree cutting edge.
Ooh.
Yes. So you can make attacks to your opponent that you can't normally make with a broadsword or a dagger. So that's where things really sort of change.
That's awesome. I wish that this wasn't my first question, but do you guys teach each other how to like sneak attack the way that Kylo did with his father?
Spoiler alert.
Are we talking about the
You know where he like has it against his stomach and then he's like right through you?
Amy loves to stab people in the neck.
Okay, the story with the whole neck stab.
There was a neck stab.
I don't know how do we get into the story so quickly?
All right, let me clarify the murder thing.
I mean, this is all pretend. It's all stage choreography. It's done in a safe manner. But a friend of ours, it was his death sequence, and he was technically dead, but he lifted his head up, signaling he was not dead yet. So I kind of just, you know, did the quick, easy move of just like,
you stab him in the neck.
Yes.
The old stab in the neck.
Old, I mean, that's sometimes that's what you got to do to end a fight.
Was this at a children's hospital? How did this, where was this?
No.
It was at New York Comic Con last year.
Okay, so let's go back for a moment and let's talk about how you guys got into A, Star Wars, and B, stabbing people in the neck on stage. Yeah.
You got a better story than me, so I'll let you go.
Oh, goodness. So I, as all kids do, grew up loving Star Wars. I remember going to see the movies when they were re-released back into the movie theaters. And I actually have the story that I always tell about Star Wars is I have a Princess Leia doll from like 1996 that my mom totally got me for Christmas. And I'm adopted from South Korea. So I was reading her bio and it says that she was adopted by Bail Organa. So I was like, done. This is it. This is my favorite character. She's adopted. I'm adopted. We're like BFFs for life now. And I actually got to meet Carrie Fisher when she was at New York Comic Con last year. And I brought the doll because everyone was like, you have to bring the doll now. You have to bring the doll. So I went up to her and she's like, oh, look, it's a doll of Princess Leia. And I was like, well, you know, this is the whole story about being adopted. And that was very influential to see a leading female character who was adopted and leading the rebellion. And she was like, you know, in all the years that I've done fan conventions, I've never, ever heard that referenced. So it's very, very special for you to share the story with me. Thank you very much. And unfortunately, you know, a few months later, she passed away. But I still have that, like, prominently displayed in my living room. And I'm always like, guys, this is the Princess Leia doll. Carrie Fisher held it in her hands. I mean, like, Star Wars has just always been special for that respect. And then I actually worked for Walt Disney World. I did the Disney College program and I did entertainment. So they did Star Wars weekends back then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so much fun.
I mean, I say that. I've never been, but oh, yeah. Sounds cool. I know about it.
They don't do it anymore. Yeah. But
they have Star Wars all the time, though.
Yeah, well, now it'll be Star Wars 24/7.
That's such a good story. I'm almost mad.
Yeah.
Because I don't have anything as good as that in my life. Like, as good of a story as that.
I don't have any emotions that positive.
No, Emily can tell you, like, I'm pretty, like, emotion-free, and I was, like, feeling a little, I was feeling something when you're talking about that. So what's your worst story? Like,
worthy story, Ruben? You can't top that. I mean, you just can't.
That's
so,
a tough act to follow.
No, I used to catch glimpses of Return of the Jedi on Channel 11. Back in the day when they used to air it on regular TV, and I never really watched the full movies until it was re-released in 1997, and it was the first movie I ever went to by myself with my friends and no parents, and loved it and was like, this is amazing, this is the best thing ever. And then I got into lightsaber choreography because I wanted to do a fan film, and I'm an editor by trade, and I thought it would be really cool to just combine Star Wars with, you know, what I do. And I was like, the best way to do is to learn. And I joined up with another group back in the day to learn lightsaber choreography, and then found Saber Guild and fell in love with the idea of doing not only just doing this and learning, but doing it for charity and really sort of like bringing to life fan fiction on stage every time we go out there. So that's how I got involved. I never got around to making the fan film that I wanted to make. We made one with Saber Guild online. But mine's just still sitting on the shelf waiting to be done. There's just too much to do with the group right now.
What's it about?
Oh, it's basically about a Sith who actually turns to the light side. Because you always hear about the Jedi's turning to the dark side. So it's about coming the other way around.
That's perfect. I've been waiting for that storyline. When I met Kylo Ren personally, when we all met Kylo.
They got dinner last year.
Yeah, I wish. I was like, oh, this is what I want. I want him to come back. So that's awesome.
Spoiler alert, he didn't.
Yeah.
It's been a year, people.
Yeah.
Some people still get mad about that. Yeah. Okay, so Amy, in your email to me, you mentioned you just had elections. And so I'm curious about how does this organization work? Because that is very structured to have an election.
Yeah. Do you want to take that? Because I feel like you're better apt at explaining
the election.
I know.
It's very secure. Okay.
It wasn't hacked.
It was not hacked.
Good.
That badly. No, it definitely was not hacked this time around. And
says the guy who apparently won.
Right, exactly.
totally ran. No one went
unopposed.
Up against him, you know?
Wow. Somehow the other nominations got deleted. I don't know what happened. In all seriousness, we hold elections every year. Saber Guild is an international organization. So there's temples all around the United States. There's one in Canada, Italy, Peru, soon to be one in Argentina.
Antarctica?
Not yet.
Oh, both
not
you and
yet.
Our
Don't
last
worry.
Guest didn't have a chapter of his group in Antarctica, and he was really upset about it.
I'm all for Eskimo Jedis because those costumes get hot.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if the Eskimos are there, but you know.
And Porgs are descendants of penguins, technically,
are
so
they?
We'll fit
the
right
porgs.
In.
Love you porgs. And the porgs. I know you love the porgs.
But no, our elections is where you go online, people get nominated for who they wish to see run the group, and the other positions, which are assistant local director and stage director. And then locally, we have other positions such as public relations, membership director, and temple librarian, because there's actually, believe it or not, a lot of paperwork that we have to go through and things that we have to keep track on. So it's a one-month process. If you're unopposed, you're nominated and you're in. And if not, then there's a question and answer period. And then people vote a week after that. So it could take upwards of a month to find out your new leadership.
How many members do you have in New York?
Empire Temple, last count we did, had 42. I believe currently half of those are fully active members, which means they show up on a regular basis. And then in Long Island, there's another temple called Endor Temple. And I believe they probably have close to another 30 to 40 themselves.
That one's filled with furries.
They're totally furry. Yeah.
How did you know?
Well, you know, the, what you call it? The Ewoks Endor, right?
So that's right.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's. See? It wasn't
yeah,
just...
you beat me on something.
See? Emily's a furry, so.
I'm not. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm not.
All right. Well, in any case, so you're the new president? I take it?
Local director.
Well, sure, local director. And so how big is the organization you're talking about? It's all across the world. Like, how did this thing get started from the beginning? How many people are in it? Tell me the highlights.
Yeah, I can definitely give you highlights. Saber Guild International was founded by Rob Estrada out in California. I believe it was the Anaheim area. And over the course of 8 years, people have sort of heard about Saber Guild and wanted to get involved. People here in New York were like, oh, that sounds cool. Let's do that here in New York. And that's how the New York chapter got started. And we basically promote and we're always out there. We're always doing things. So people in their area, if there's no temple close to them, they contact saberguild.org and they can go about starting their own temple close to home where they are.
What does that entail?
Mm-hmm. It's not for the faint of heart. I love all of our costuming organizations, such as the Mandalorian Mercs and the 501st and the Rebel Legion.
Ooh, 501st.
They're amazing groups, and they're really good at what they do.
But
Saber Guild actually requires its members to meet up at least once or twice a month to practice stage choreography. So not only do we get dressed up, but we're required to actually look good on stage and have our moves and techniques look good. And you can't do that without practice. So if you wanted to start a temple, you need to really dedicate between, I would say, 1 and 2 nights a week where you guys can meet up for about 2 hours each night and practice your moves and create scripts and write audio and do all that other great stuff.
You've mentioned writing scripts a couple times. Are you guys writing narratives, or do you have characters of your own that you're playing?
Oh, I get to take this in? Oh, thanks. So we actually have our own Jedi and Sith unique characters that we come up with.
Cool.
We do have some face characters. Like, we do have a Mace Windu. We do have some Kylo Rens. We do have some Reys. But we all individually come up with our own Jedis and Siths. So we get to kind of come up with our costumes and put together our biographies. Some of us have linked our characters together. So we have our backstories, and we'll kind of interact with one another when we see each other at events, which is really fun for the actor and me.
Stories.
So my character is, well, I do have a Sith, but I'm predominantly a Jedi.
Cool. So you guys have your two sides.
Yes.
Like all good Jedi.
Exactly. So my Jedi is Kamios Renard, who is from Naboo. She is a lover, not a hater. She'd rather diplomatically handle struggles rather than use fighting, which is kind of my backstory because I'm not the strongest in stage choreography. So I am going to write that into my background. But it's kind of fun because I have two friends, Kevin and Anne, who we've kind of become this like trio of Jedi, and we've interwoven our backstories, and we have like 20 bazillion pages of friend fiction to figure out what our background narrative is. So it actually is a lot of fun to connect with new people and see how your characters interact and come from the same planets or not from the same planets.
Please tell me at least some of that back friend fiction.
The most dramatic bit from that.
Oh, it is such a drama. Again, I mean, like Star Wars was supposed to be like a space soap opera.
Right, yeah.
I'm like trying to dig back. We were all friends. Nivik, who's Kevin Cobb's character, and our friend Sue's character were friends in the Jedi Temple. His master ended up taking my character as an apprentice over Sue, so she got really upset and left to become a Sith. And now tries to like foil all our plans and tries to steal Nivik's apprentice, who's our friend Anne. So it got really dramatic to the point where we were just like writing all these stories about all our characters and like sending it to one another. And it was like, oh my God, like page turners on the edge of your seat. Like it gets serious, guys.
Is this published somewhere?
It's hidden on a server. Right now,
I swear we're not that nerdy.
You should publish it.
We totally are that nerdy.
Yeah, you should publish it. Why not?
One thing that we've actually that I've toyed around with was the idea of taking some of our scripts and either doing a black box series, which we would call the Empire Temple Black Box series, like the toys, the black box series, or to do a to try and get some guest voice actors and actually do an audio drama.
Cool.
For some of our scripts.
Well, you're like you said, you're a video editor. So do you use those skills? Do you apply them towards doing videos for this, or you know, using that for dramatizing your characters and whatnot?
Well, I definitely try to take my storytelling ability that I use in my everyday editing skills and bring it to the stage and the scripts. I don't have the group grew so much, and we do so many things. Last year, I think we did 56 events, which is over one a week.
Yeah.
And there's just no time to sit down and edit and go through all the footage. Mm-hmm. So I do promo videos every now and then, but a lot of times I just don't have the manpower to do it anymore.
I know that it seems like it's kind of related to LARPing to me a little bit. But I know that one thing about LARPing is that groups have like an agreed upon timeline. Like, are you guys in a certain place in the franchise?
We are, and we are evolving out of that. Originally, we were in the Clone Wars based era where there was the most Jedi.
Right.
So there's a lot of canon reference that we can go off of to sort of build our stories. And when a little kid comes up to me and go, who are you? I say, oh, have you seen the Battle of Geonosa? I was in the far background. Go put on episode 2 and look for me. I'm there.
Have you identified yourself in there? Or are you just joking?
I'm just one of them in the background, sort of running around. Yeah. The one that's really blurry that you can't see is me.
You're the bad CGI.
Yeah, I'm the very bad CGI. So, but that was our main canon that we followed. Now with The Last Jedi coming out and sort of, you know, the new order, when we learn more about where Luke's Jedis went, I mean, we all know they died, but there has to be some more out there because he had to have trained some.
Right.
Hopefully we can incorporate some of that, the new stuff, and bring in Rey and Kylo in more interesting ways into our stories.
So would you sort of like fast forward? Like, would you get new characters as you bring in those
people?
Well,
right now what we do is, depending on where we are and what we do, either we call our Sith now Inquisitors, which is slightly breaking canon because there were only, what, 7, I think?
Yeah, no. I won't tell anyone.
But kids relate more to the word Inquisitors than Sith, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, because of Rebels, and they all watch Rebels, and so they see Red Blade, you know, Seventh Sister, Grand Inquisitor, so they relate to that a little bit more. Or if we have Kylo Ren with us, we are the Knights of Ren.
That's great.
So we sort of change that up just a little bit to try and, you know, stay relevant. And when we do our kids training, you know, a lot of times we say, you know, we left before Kylo Ren destroyed the order, and we need to rebuild that order. And so we're here looking for new younglings Should Master Luke call upon you, you will be trained in the Jedi arts.
So what is, who is your character, Ruben? Because we know Amy's. Who are you?
Oh, well, my Jedi, I have a Jedi, a Sith, and a Mandalorian.
Cool.
And my Jedi's name is Master Coda Chromius, named after the Kodak Chrome that's discontinued. And I am on the Council of First Knowledge, which basically means I'm like Indiana Jones. So I'm an Jedi archaeologist who goes out to find Sith holocrons. And I had actually gotten frozen, sort of a la Captain America, and thawed out later on in one of my journeys. So that's how I got brought from way back in the day, sort of up to present day, quote unquote, canon.
Do you have a lot of friend fiction?
I do not. Yes.
You were written out of our friend fiction.
I was.
Wow,
I was.
What happened?
I was just, I still hold the grudge.
As you should. And I believe that was all Kevin Cobb. I'm going to call you
Thanks,
out on
Kevin.
That.
Wow, Kevin.
Yep.
That's not a cool move, Kevin.
Nope.
How do you decide when you're going to, if you have multiple characters, is it just more useful to play one in a certain storyline or?
Oh, I was going to say, really, a lot of the time it's the needs for the event.
Okay.
If we are doing a show, how many Jedi and Sith fights do we need? And we kind of break it down from there. That's why predominantly I'm my Jedi rather than Sith, unless there's an overabundance of Jedi. Woo! And then you just have to jump back in.
That's really it. It's on an as-need basis. And we've actually noticed that a lot of our events recently are calling for Jedi. They really want to see more generic Jedi. People seem to still relate to them, even though they haven't been around. You know, there's been Luke. And Return of the Jedi Luke and Empire Strikes Back Luke and A New Hope Luke and then some blurry guys like me and the other prequels. But they still relate very much to the traditional Jedi. And so I keep telling our members, have both costumes. Because when we get called for an event and they say we only want Jedi.
Oh, so they can request it.
We've had events that were like, we only want Jedi. And a lot of times it's like, okay, that's fine. That's what people know. And or they'll be like, what's a Sith? And we're like, okay, well, Jedi it is then. You know, so
Jedi fight each other?
Sorry?
So Jedi fight each other if you're all Jedi?
We'll do spars if we need to. We'll set it up as, you know, this is a training session. So the fight would end in a draw and a bow or like a ha-ha, I got you. You got to keep training kind of situation.
So do you have lines and stuff that you recite or, you know, speak and perform for the audience?
We'll actually record our shows. And we'll have the VO track running in the background as we perform.
Ah, very cool. And so you do this for, like you said, children's hospitals and other places like that, generally speaking?
Yeah, community events. Comic-Cons are a big one for us. That's where we raise a lot of our charitable funds. We do a training at Ronald McDonald House, which is coming up in November, I believe.
Yes.
Don't hold me to that, but sometime very, very soon.
It's actually November. Congratulations.
It is. Yes, I remember. And then we performed at St. Mary's Children's Hospitals. And we're looking to reach out to more hospitals to do what we do because we really feel that we can bring a interactive experience to the children. And that's what we do this for. We have some fans that are, you know, adult age, but to be honest, like, we gear our shows towards the kids. That's why we do this.
And you were talking about how you also have trainings, you said. So tell me about that. You teach kids how to do it? You teach people how to do it as part of your events?
Both, actually. Yep.
We do kids training, which is most families just know it as very similar to Jedi Temple that they do down in the Disney parks.
Yeah.
What we teach the kids during a 20-minute session is the first form of lightsaber combat because there are seven. So we go over the first form, which is the basis, and a defensive drill. And then for adults, it's more focused on stage choreography and kind of what we go through. So some basic moves that we kind of all learn as, you know, first timers in class. And then hopefully they will join us in our classes. We usually hold classes on Fridays over at the Chelsea Rec Center from 8 to 10 p.m.
So what are these moves that you're talking about? Because I don't know much about stage choreography or really anything that has to do with fighting people that's not through, like, tweets. I've been getting a lot of Twitter trolls lately.
Yeah.
So
really?
Thanks to Emily in part.
I know.
Yeah, a lot of Gamergate trolls have been coming at me lately.
Oh no. Yeah.
I retweeted a tweet of his, and women have a hard time on the internet, so I think they just like started attacking Jordan too.
We got to get you a lightsaber so at least you can defend yourself walking down the street.
I'm an ally.
All right.
So tell me about like these moves you're talking about and you teach. Like, what is the right way to stage fight with a lightsaber?
Well, one of the main things that we like to teach is we have five zones: your left shoulder, right shoulder, left leg, right leg, and head. And we always teach the to pretend that you have a bubble around you. So you always want to strike through your opponent, but within the area of the protective bubble, which is 6 inches away from the target you're actually trying to hit. So when you swing your lightsaber, you want to swing through your opponent and make sure that when you stop about 6 inches away. And when you block, you push your lightsaber all the way out to the left side or all the way out to the right side to make sure that, you know, there is a barrier there and that you don't get hit. Some of the other things we teach are very simple maneuvers, such as a follow-through, which is basically making big giant X's, up-downs, which is smacking in the middle and smacking down below. We have a move called the bread and butter, which is attacking shoulders vertically, stabs, and all those other good things too.
Stabbing.
Yeah, you know, you got to stab to the neck.
Classic.
You know? Yeah, classic neck stab.
I can hear the lightsabers in my head while you're describing this.
It's great. It really is. And the best part about it is I always tell people, it's like, don't just swing your lightsaber. Like, even if you just come for one class and say, hey, I want to put together a small little piece of choreography, or I want to mess around with my friends, come to us. Let us at least show you the proper form, even the basics, just to make sure that you don't get hurt doing what you do.
That's cool.
What kind of lightsabers do you use? I mean, obviously, I assume they don't cut off limbs, but like, are they the really good ones, like the collector's ones? Are they the more, you know, commercial grade, so you can mess around with them? What do you use?
There are people who build lightsabers and they're called sabersmiths and they are fantastic at what they do. I just cobble them together to make sure they work for stage.
So what are they made of?
So yeah. They're made of aircraft grade aluminum.
What?
Yeah. They're made of aircraft grade aluminum and basically it's a giant flashlight. So there is a 6 to 12 watt high powered LED in the hilt. Uh-huh. That lights up through a polycarbonate tube, and there's a mirror at the top of the tube that reflects the light back down. Very simple. It's ran on either a rechargeable battery or AAA batteries. Hmm. Some have sound and some don't.
Where do you get the airplane aluminum?
We actually buy our hilts from a manufacturer such as Vader's Vault, which is one of the best lightsaber manufacturers there are out there. You can fight with them. They come full with sound. They stand up to just about anything. And then one of my personal favorites for stage choreography is Ing Chow's Armory, located out on Long Island. Mm-hmm. The dude is a former martial artist who actually built his hilts to be perfectly balanced for dueling and stage.
What?
So he basically sells us the hilts, and I put the electronics in myself.
I'm looking at them right now on VadersVault.com, and these are pretty cool, heavy-duty things.
Yeah, they're incredibly awesome, and Dina and Alan, who run Vader's Vault, are some of the most nicest people. They've donated, along with Chris, who runs Ing Chow's Armory, have always donated lightsabers to us to do raffles for charity, and we only use the best quality lightsabers that we can, because we don't want them failing, and we want to make sure when we go on they're nice and bright. And we also like to work with people who are nice and help us give back to the community. So.
So this one I'm looking at, Starkiller Run 2,
yep.
Vader's one, or I don't know. Either way, over 100 parts and pieces, which is wild.
Yeah. Vader's Vault has some very unique designs. And they've come out with their combat class. And by most recently, I think I mean in the last like 4 years. they've really hit the market, and their parts are just top notch, you know, made in the USA, and they're fantastic. I can't say anything. They were just at New York Comic Con too, and the line for the booth was like around the corner for them.
Do you ever get people who want to learn like ridiculous styles? Like, who's that cat with like four lightsabers from the prequels. You know what I'm talking about?
General Grievous.
Like, you're making a face like you've heard this request before.
It's interesting because, I mean, I came into Saber Guild because I wanted the charity aspect rather than learning forms.
Right.
And there are people who come in with 20 years of sword work experience and they're like, lightsabers, let's use swords that light up now.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like a lot of people come in with different thoughts of what exactly they're going to learn and get out of stage choreography. There are technically 7 forms of lightsaber combat. We only have three. Yeah. As of right now.
Yeah.
We're still slowly working on all 7 forms.
What are they?
Oh, goodness. If I can go over all of them.
And we design them. Like,
we can. I can only talk about the 3 that we have.
Yes.
Because I don't know all of them off the top of my head.
Fair enough.
Shicho, which is the first form of lightsaber combat, and that was created by General Sun. He is a martial artist who took the form, was reading up and did some research, and created Shicho. And I think Terra Prime Lightsaber Academy Online, they're like an online education. They're more martial arts focused.
Mm-hmm.
They also use his form of Shicho. It's the most widely used form of Shicho. We actually modified it slightly, got his permission to do so, which was great.
Wow.
He was like, what'd you change? And we're like, it's just a little this instead of a little that. And he was like, oh, all right, great. You know, fantastic. Then we have Form 5 Jemso, which is the form of the Skywalkers.
Oh.
And that was created by Master Rab Rashi of New York Sword School. I hope I said that right.
Yes.
Yeah. And he is a kendo instructor up in Harlem. He has his own school, and he did that for us as a favor. And then our friend Jesse created Makashi, along with another individual who unfortunately don't remember his name out in Seattle. Created the form Makashi, which is the 3rd form, which is also the form you'll see used by the Inquisitor in the original Inquisitor in season 1 of Rebels.
So what's the difference between all these different forms?
Shicho is a beginner's form. It's meant to be used to go through like a battlefield of opponents and to learn to protect each side of your body and your basic strikes. Jemso is a very aggressive form, which is why Anakin uses it.
That guy.
Yeah, it's very attack heavy and to fight multiple opponents. And Makashi is very much like fencing. It's more of a fencing style.
What would you, I mean, I feel like I keep bringing up Kylo Ren. Clearly, I have a weird crush on him. When he's like hacking away at the ship when he's really angry, like, is he just losing control? Or
spoiler alert.
Does he have his own style? Stop that. Like, does he fit into a style that you know of?
Form 7?
Nah. Honestly, I don't think we've seen enough to really, I would say, if anything, based upon his character, it would be Jemso because it is...
Like
the form
angrier.
Of the Skywalkers, and it is very aggressive.
Cool.
His hack and slash is just him hacking and slashing away.
Huh.
But I think what was very interesting in the fight between Kylo and Rey and what we saw was how arrogant he is.
Yes.
And he really just thought, I can sort of go through this.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say I'd have to peg him as Jemso, just
awesome.
Because that would be where his lineage would lead him.
I almost can't believe that you guys are here tonight because the new trailer for the new movie premieres tonight, and you might be like, are you worried about getting home in time to see it?
Well, that's what cell phones are for,
right? It's a DVR. And
I mean, I think if we needed to see it, we could find a way to watch it. I found a way to watch it when Force Awakens came out last time, and not to sort of peg myself, but I couldn't make it home in time, and I figured, let me just go to... let me go to Hooters and watch the football game, and I'll catch the trailer. Wait, the story gets better.
So you went to Hooters to watch a Star Wars trailer,
right? I kid you not.
That's amazing.
Because I knew it was the only place where I could get chicken wings and have TV.
You
right?
Could have said so Buffalo like, Wild
the
Wings.
Only place that has chicken wings and TV. The only place that has those two things that every bar has,
and the Star
Wars
Roo. Trailer.
In Roo, because. Buffalo Wild Wings on football nights.
You can't get
really
in.
Insane.
You can't get in.
Where do you live?
I live in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, but
okay.
I work on 45th Street in Manhattan.
Mm.
Yeah, there's just no bars anywhere around there.
Well, when I got there, and I was like, I'm not going to be able to watch this trailer because it's obviously too loud in the football, right? So I was like, all right, I'll just eat dinner.
But Hooters was just silent, I'm sure.
Hooters, when the trailer came on, the whole Hooters went silent. I kid you not. You could hear a pin drop. And nobody said anything. All the eyes were focused on the TVs. And then as soon as it was over, everybody was like, blah, 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 but it went dead silent. And I was like, only Star Wars has the power to shut down not only a bar in Midtown, but a Hooters in Midtown during Monday Night Football. So, I mean, I may just run back there and because I know yeah, I'll have a good quiet experience, you know?
So, did people like it at Hooters? Were people fans of the trailer?
Oh, I don't know. As soon as it was done, I left. left.
You just finished your chicken wings, got another beer, and then left.
You know, pretty much.
I'm all for going to Hooters. Just a very funny explanation.
I mean, it was. Look, if you're gonna go, I mean, might as well go someplace to make it a good story. So, yeah.
Where did you watch the Force Awakens trailer?
Oh, it's totally, and it's funny because I grew up doing theater, so I'm like so do not know a thing about sports. Mm. So I was like camped out on my futon, going like, when is this gonna be on? How long is this game? How many quarters are there? What are these innings things? What's going on? And my friends were like, okay, well, you have a while. You have a while to just like sit here and watch this game and pretend that you know what's going on. And then as soon as it went on, because they did all this like commentary before and then they finally showed the trailer. I was like, okay, guys, you want us to watch this trailer, just put it on already. So I mean, at least tonight they actually gave a time of when it's going to air. It's supposed to air at 9:30 on ESPN. So that was very nice of them.
Mm-hmm. You think you'll be able? You think you'll have to be a Hooters for that?
I mean, yeah. Well, I think it's going to have to be a new tradition of mine to watch all the trailers at Hooters.
I mean, Bainbridge is a good distance away.
I know.
I'm all for it.
No, I'm in. I mean, I'm all about tradition. So if it worked once, why don't fix what's not broken?
I mean, like, who knows what would happen to the trailer if you weren't at Hooters?
That's what I mean.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, it might not even air.
Right? Yeah.
That's what I mean. Force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you like The Force Awakens?
I thought it was good.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't think it was the
political.
Best. But I think it will always have a place in my heart because as a filmmaker, I understand what JJ had to do. And I understand what Disney had to do in order to make this film happen. And they had to crush a lot of Star Wars hopes by getting rid of the expanded universe. But you can't ask somebody to create something new and original and move the story forward with 30, 40 years of fan fiction and other novels that kind of, frankly, we love them, but they don't make any sense. They don't fit into any sort of canon. Canon timeline, and they were there to just fill in voids of that fans wanted. So with JJ coming in, he basically pulled the biggest reboot in history, you know, and nobody ever calls it a reboot, but The Force Awakens is a reboot. And the beauty of it is the fact that it bridged the old and the new in a way that can push the franchise forward. And what was fantastic about the other thing that was fantastic about it was I sat down. I was in Somalia recently, and me and a director friend of mine and one of my other friends sat down after a long day, and they were like, let's watch Star Wars. And I put on Rogue One, and my friend, his name's Brent, and he just was like, I can't get into it. Where's the one with Harrison Ford? Right? And I put on Force Awakens, and he got into it because he was able to relate to the Star Wars of old with Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Chewbacca. And it really, he was able to sit down and watch it and connect with it in a way where he wasn't with Rogue One. Like, that was just made for the fans. So I love that JJ was able to do that and do it in a way that everybody could appreciate a fun film. And that's what Star Wars should be.
But you didn't love it.
I mean, it has its flaws, but all movies do.
Sure.
But I don't think anything will ever be Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Amy?
Oh, and saying it for me, it's Return of the Jedi. I don't know why.
That's really?
And not even saying that's because of Ewoks. It's not. I don't know. I love that. And I guess it's like the Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, big dramatic fight at the end. And then the redemption of Darth Vader, Anakin Skywalker. I always love that film. But The Force Awakens and this whole new trilogy is special to me for multiple reasons. One of which, even though I was, around when they did the prequels, just growing up watching, you know, Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia and Han Solo, to be there for the new chapter of these characters, was really special for me. But then also, of course, taking on the other side, you know, representation does matter. And I love the fact that you're finally seeing a woman who as a Jedi, because you've always had these stories of Luke and Anakin, and not to say that there weren't, you know, women Jedi in the prequels. But it's nice to see that centered on Rey, who is a central figure now. And then I'm very excited for Rose Tico to be coming into the film as an Asian woman. So I'm very excited to see her because she's obviously there was like zero information given about her character yet. But it's what's being told is she's definitely like an everyday woman who kind of just gets swept into the rebellion. So it'll be really interesting to see like an everyday average character kind of hopefully become a hero. And see how that affects the storylines of this new, you know, trilogy.
I may be reading into it, but I feel like she looks like she's giving Finn an attitude in several of the photos we've seen.
I cannot wait for all of the sass. That's all I'm hoping for.
I like The Force Awakens a lot because I didn't read a lot of the extra, the supplementary and the extended universe thing. So I didn't have that loss, so I could just appreciate it. It felt so much like a New Hope reboot in a way, but that's fine, you know. Yeah. Do you guys like really? So let's say that The Last Jedi isn't good. I love Rian Johnson. I'm sure it'll be really good.
It's going to be amazing,
right? But let's say for some reason it stinks, right? How much would that hurt you as a fan? Or are you just like Star Wars is something different than just movies to you now?
I think for me, you know, if the movie's bad, I'm not going to be one of those guys that are going to run off and just go crazy and be like, oh, Disney ruined Star Wars. And I just think if it's a bad movie, it's a bad movie. That's just what it is. And there are many things that can go wrong on a film set. There are many things that can happen in the edit room. There are many people who can involve that have a very high pay grade that can just make changes. Hmm. However, I don't think that's the case with the people in charge currently. If you look at everything Disney has done with Marvel, every time I go, this movie's going to bomb, I'm like, wow, that was amazing. You know?
What do you think about all that drama, though, with Ron Howard replacing Lord and Miller? You have the Rogue One drama. There's been a bit of a backstage intrigue.
No, it's good. Sure. It's good because, and I'll tell you exactly why it's good. The Rogue One drama, I feel, really came down to the ending. And it was very much stated that they were not supposed to die. Mm-hmm. And in the original story or cut, and I think that's why you have a lot of these promo images that aren't in the movie, because who would have thought, hey, Disney's going to let everybody die? Like, that was a bold move and one that frankly needed to happen. And I'm very pleased that they made that decision to have a good ending that makes sense. A lot of other movie companies would have just been like, no, we need to market them more. We could still get way more out of K2SO. We could still get more out of Jyn Erso. And they're like, well, no, they never show up again. This makes sense. And so I think that's why that drama happened there. In the case of the Han Solo movie, from what I've read, and it's all rumors, and nobody's ever going to confirm any of this, they said that the comedy just wasn't Star Wars comedy. And it's a very specific type. And I think Kathleen Kennedy and the people up there are like, this just isn't Star Wars. It's not working out. If we're going to have a Han Solo movie, we got to make it good. And it has to be Han Solo comedy, not Lego Batman comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a very, you know, not 21 Jump Street. And I have a feeling if you watch what was originally done, it might have been like 21 Jump Street with Han Solo and Chewbacca. And I don't think that would work. And I think that, you know, so I'm confident when they have the drama, it's for a very good reason. And I'd rather have them shuffle the deck and you know, say, hey, we're gonna throw all this away than to be like, oh, we already spent the money and, you know, let's just put out the movie because you know it's gonna make money. It doesn't matter. So
yeah, I mean, you sold me with that argument because Rogue One blew me away. I cannot believe they made a war film in this universe, like a truly about trauma, and just like you said, that gut punch of an ending. So yeah, maybe they'll work quality up to the surface.
And no love story.
Yeah.
Like, that was the best part about it. It's like, you know, they could have very much easily went with the whole, like, you know, oh, there's the love story, and then they all, and they didn't do any of that. They were like, this is the mission. Mm-hmm. Go in. And my only critique on the movie was I wish they had a little bit more despair going into the mission. You know, they kind of like
more sadness, please.
Yeah, yeah. I was kind of like, you know, if I compared it to 300, like the Spartans knew they weren't coming out of this thing, and you felt it with every fight.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And you just ruined all of these movies.
I'm going to ruin every movie. Are. You know, I just called this a podcast called The Spoiler. You know, I'd be perfect for it.
They're like dream podcast, just ruining everything for everyone. I mean, if Star Wars can survive the prequels, I feel like it can survive literally anything.
Agreed. But
although,
they weren't that bad.
Team Jar Jar.
The prequels weren't that bad.
You there know? We go. You know what? You said it.
I did, and I'll go out there on a limb and say it. My thing is, a lot of people think because I love Star Wars that I love George Lucas, and he's a godsend to film.
But you hate him.
I just don't think George Lucas is a great director. I think he's a good director. What George Lucas is fantastic at is using current technology to create films, and he did that with Star Wars, the original. It was all things you haven't seen before. And when people don't give credit to the prequels, they were one of the first films shot fully on HD and using green screen. Like, the whole movie was shot on green screen. It was one of the pioneers to do that. Movies have been shot on film on green screen, but never almost 100% and with HD. And that's what he really gravitated towards. He used all this new technology to create this world. It wasn't what we were expecting, but from a technological standpoint, it's a masterpiece.
You know, and we're talking about now back to the new movies. Rey is the centerpiece of it, as Amy mentioned. And like you said, that matters so much, you know, to young girls. Have you found in the time that you've been there that Rey being there has brought more women into the fold, both in fandom and just in terms of the saber fighting?
I don't know if it's brought more women in. I feel like women have been there, but they're finally having this character, this focal point character that they can finally be like, finally, we are here and we will now show you how strong we've always been. And we were fortunate. Some of our members actually were interviewed for Looking for Leia, which is a documentary that's being made right now or being finalized, which focuses on the women who have been influenced by Leia and this whole fandom and all of their stories of how they've been fans either from, you know, the first day of opening of the film in 1977, they've been fans ever since, to, you know, fans that came in the 90s when Clone Wars were on, all the way up to, you know, their kids now. But also in seeing conventions, like originally you kept seeing, you know, all the Princess Leias running around. Now you're seeing Princess Leias and Amidalas and Jyn Ersos and Reys. So it's really great seeing that whole mix of all these strong female characters. But also a lot of our members have had families come up to us and say, you know, thank you for being a Jedi and being a woman. I had a mom come up to one of my favorite stories is there was a little boy who came up to me at Playfair last year, and he literally just went up to me and was like, you can't be a Jedi, you're a girl. What the?
Did you slap that kid?
Well, his mother was, she just like looked at him, and her automatic comeback was, I'm a girl, are you saying I can't be a Jedi? And that was end of the conversation. She just guided him away. And probably 10 minutes later, there was a woman who came by with her daughter, and they were both Asian. And she was like, I have to thank you because it is the first time we had just done Padawan training. She was like, it was the first time my daughters watched an Asian woman Jedi lead a class of kids in learning how to use a lightsaber. And she's like, you know, we've watched all these movies and you see pilots. She's like, but you haven't seen, you know, a Jedi. And that was really inspirational, not just for my daughter, but for me. So thank you for being here. And that was just really special. But I wouldn't say that it's bringing them out. It's just, we've always been here, and it's, you know, just solidifying our place in this universe.
Makes you feel like part of it versus on the outside a little bit,
yeah.
I imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the Padawan training is when you teach kids the combat?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we don't teach them combat.
Well, I know.
You're not teaching kids at the Ronald McDonald House to hit each other or anything.
No.
That's rule number two.
Rule number one.
Yeah. Sorry.
Rule number one.
Just kidding. Yep.
What's rule number two?
Yeah.
Don't leave your training spots.
There's that one of my favorite like viral videos on the internet is the little girl who You're nodding.
Yeah.
She's like, she goes through the training at Disney, and then the Darth Vader character like says, "Yield to me," and she takes a knee, and she's like, "Yes." do you ever get kids like that?
Yes, we have
so many kids like that.
Who want to be sick
all the time? We were at Atlantic City Boardwalk Con, and they were great. They gave us so much space to work, and they let us just run our trainings basically all day long, which is great, and we'd love to do that. There was two instances that happened over the course of that weekend. One was, and we normally never let this happen, but our guys, I got to give every member of Empire Temple credit because they know how to improv and they know how to make sure that they follow the rules and make sure everybody's safe. This one Kylo Ren character came up to fight the Sith and turned around and was like, "I'm going to join you." And this kid was maybe no more than 8 years old. And our Jedi in the back came forward because we couldn't let him, you know, work with the other kids. It's dangerous, you know. Mm-hmm. Our Jedi from the back lined up just like the kids did in the training and took turns going and working with Kylo until everyone was done. Now, there was 30 kids in that class. So that means those Jedi that stepped forward to work with Kylo went through that 15 times each with this kid. And what made it more amazing is the kid then started to play along with the training. And at the end of our training, we force pushed the bad guys away. Mm-hmm. And when we force pushed, the kid went back.
Aww.
He played along, you know, and he was the last one off stage shaking his fist and went behind stage with us. And he was like, "You Jedi," you know, it was amazing. And later on that day, we had the Sith come out, and a girl who was autistic was in the audience, and her mom said, "You know, would she be able to do the training?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Absolutely, you know, she can do it." Our Sith was so believable that the little girl ran from the back all the way up to defend one of the Jedi.
Get out.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, our members, they improv with the best of them, and they saw it coming from a mile away and just jumped in front and was like, "Don't worry, we're professionals. We have this. We'll protect everybody." And she was like, "Are you sure?" And they're like, "We got this." And she's like, "Okay." And she goes to the back, and turns out it was like her last weekend in the States. They moved to Ireland on Monday, but like – took right off and was like, "I'm going to protect that Jedi." And the kids, they love it. And you can't really sort of, you never know. And I tell this to every one of our members, you never know who you're going to affect in costume. So you need to be on your game, you know?
So your membership, you're a video editor. So what is the demographics here? What do most people do for a living? Cause this is all like, you know, a really deep hobby for people. So who are the members of the, Empire City.
Are you ready
films?
For this? Our age limit is 13 to 51.
Cool.
Whoa.
Well, there's no really age limit.
Well, no, 900.
I mean, Yoda.
900 is where I draw the line.
All right,
901,
fine.
You better be a Force ghost or else something is going crazy.
He will I'm kill sorry. You if you're 900 years old.
I'm sorry. Something about living to 901 freaks me out.
Freaks you out? Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Our members run the gamut, age-wise, generation-wise, occupation-wise. I do marketing. That's my job during the day. We have actors. We have, oh goodness, now I'm like, who else?
We have actors. We have students. We have doctors. We have, is he a doctor or scientist? He's a doctor and a scientist,
no, yeah,
right?
I guess now he's a doctor, yeah. Technicalities,
yeah,
kids.
Absolutely. And I mean,
surgery. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. We have basically anything that you could, students, you know.
Yeah.
We have one, Dylan, who is 14 going on 40, and his parents were like, you know, "Can he be in the group?" And I'm like, "Well, just so you know, we do tend to be a little bit more mature." And
we did Hooters.
We do meet in Hooters.
To watch the trailer.
To watch the trailer. But, you know, sometimes, you know, words slip that may not be 14-year-old appropriate in class, or somebody gets hurt and, you know, cusses or something. And I was like, just to let you know, like, he can totally be here. But just, you know, be aware that there are older members here.
It's going to get real.
Yeah. And they and his parents are amazing. And they were just like, "Well, you got to learn sometime." You know,
I bet that kid has a filthier mouth than anyone else in the group.
He is one of the most loving people and is so helpful. He will go out of the way to do anything and help, and he works with the kids phenomenally, and he's just a pleasure to have, and he's 14, you know, going out into the community and, you know, combining helping people with his love of Star Wars, and we can give him that opportunity, and, you know, he pays it forward by just being awesome.
If someone listening wants to get involved with the Guild, what would be the best first step?
Well, if you happen to be in the New York City area, you can check out our Facebook page, Empire Saber Guild, and we post all of our events because not only are we here in New York City, we also have an outpost up in Westchester. So they have classes on Fridays as well.
Less intense Saber Guild people. The ones with families and
they're pretty intense though.
Actually,
they're pretty intense. But they're a really great bunch of people, and it's really great that, you know, they have an opportunity out there in Westchester, because I have some friends who work here in the city but live up there. So they're like, oh, thank God, finally, I have an opportunity to go to a Saber Guild class and not have to wait hours after I'm done with my job and have to do something in New York and then travel back up. So we have classes, once again, at the Chelsea Rec Center from 8 to 10 on Fridays. And you can check out our events and ask for a guest pass for your first class. But if you are located anywhere else in the world, you can check out saberguild.org to find out if there is a temple near you or more information on how you can start one yourself. Hashtag marketing.
Yeah. Or you could go to Hooters and just find Ruben.
That's right. Every Star Wars trailer from now on.
That is going to be an amazing tradition. I feel like that should be the meetup for every Star Wars fan.
You know, I'll do it on meetup.com. I'll get it started.
You should. Oh, you would get so many people.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. You probably would.
You should get a sponsorship. Would you take a sponsorship from Hooters?
Well... No, we cannot take any sponsorship. Yeah.
Oh, really? Just because of a charitable organization, or?
Well, it's basically everything we do is for free.
Okay.
We don't charge for anything. Anything that we make monetarily that we ask for goes directly to St. Mary's Children's Hospital.
My God, you're such good people.
Yeah,
we actually just did, HasCon, and they were like, you know, how much does it cost to get you guys here? And we're like, we don't take any money, but you can donate lightsabers to Ronald McDonald House. And they're like, how many? And we're like, 95. And they're like, we'll give you 200. And we're like,
yeah.
Lord.
They've
you know,
amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, everything we do is not, you know, I tell people when they come in this door, you got to be selfless to an extent, mm-hmm. you know, because what we're doing is we're not. Well, I don't want to make what we sound do inferior or belittle it, because our members bust their butts to put on quality shows. And we're not professionals. We are fans first and foremost. But when you go out there, you know, you're doing this for the kids. You're not going to become a famous Broadway actor or be in the next Star Wars film. Most likely. You never know.
Your fan film is going to – you're going to have to make your fan film.
I'm going to make my fan film. But you're doing this really for the kids. And we went through a transition phase where we went from being like shows and shows and shows to, you know, well, let's focus on the community. What could we do for St. Mary's? What could we do for Ronald McDonald House? What could we do for the puppetry arts? You know, and so when members come now, it's like, okay, well, we're going to do our shows and our cons, and that's for us. Mm-hmm. But we're also going to do all this other stuff as well. And that's going to be most important, because I will take a community event over a con any day of the week, because that's what's really important. And that is where you get the opportunity to look a young man or woman in the eye and let them know that they have the opportunity to become warriors of the light, and not in a weird way, but in a way of to do good in your community and to do good for others. And that's what a Jedi is. And you can impact somebody way more out in the community one-on-one than you can with 150,000 people in a convention.
No wonder why you ran unopposed.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. I was like, God, you're an orator.
Sure, Jedi. Well, I think we will, on that inspiring note, wrap it up. Thanks, guys, so much for being here on the Phantom Files.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Emily, how can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter at Emily G Monster. Please send me nice things because we've been getting a lot of poisonous tweets this week.
Yeah, somebody send something nice to me on Twitter. It's been, you know, more disastrous than usual. I'm Jordan Zakarin, JordanZakarin, and definitely send us tweets. Emily's shaking her head, but you don't know what it's like to have my kind of name.
No, I'm shaking my head because you always spell your name in the least, like, audible way possible.
JordanZakarin. Anyways, you'll find it on the description where you can subscribe, give us a nice comment, give us a lot of stars. If you can do more than five, that'd be great. We would love some fans. And then you can be on the Fandom Files to be as our fans. So thanks, guys, again for being here. And you can find us in the next episode when that comes out. All right, bye.